Hey everyone, Dan Smith here, the host of Coffee and Space Podcast. I'm excited that you've joined me this week. I'm excited about the guests that I've got this week. I'm really particularly excited about the subject matter we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the apocalypse. And I've got Shwe-Teen Christine Nee on the show. You may remember her from November of 2021, where I had her on to talk about a collection of short stories that she translated called Synopticon 2021, which is up for this year's British Science Fiction Award. Urge everyone to go read that. It's a really great book. She's also the author of a nonfiction book called From Kuan Yin to Chairman Mao, The Essential Guide to Chinese Deities, which is a great reference for anyone writing in the mythological or even the cultural context that has Chinese characters into it. If you're using Chinese context and Chinese culture in your story, I highly recommend From Kuan Yin to Chairman Mao. Shwe-Teen, thank you for joining me again this week. Thanks for having Coffee and Space with us.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me again on this show. It's great to be back. And thanks for reading my last book, my first book.
I find that expanding my cultural understanding of the world, which is woefully low, my understanding is woefully low, is helping me a lot. And there's a lot of things that I still don't understand, of course. I've traveled to several countries because I'm in the military, U.S. military, but even then, I don't understand everything, probably never going to understand everything. I'm just hoping to get to a point where I understand something. And so you have graciously agreed to come on and talk about one of my favorite subjects, the apocalypse. And so thank you for coming on to do that.
Yeah, it's certainly a very interesting subject, considering the times that we're in and how much we look to the future in our fiction. And civilization is huge, so there is so much to learn.
Well, there really is. And that's one of the things that I'm going to want to chat about as we get into this. China has been around so much longer than America, of course. In one form or another, China has been around thousands of years. And so, and has experienced several things that we might call apocalyptic movements, at least locally. Civil wars, invasions, pestilence, all kinds of different things that has transpired that maybe in some, at least certain Western cultures, my Western culture for sure, haven't seen yet, definitely not on the scale. And so I think it's interesting to get your take, and so I'm excited to do so. The first thing I just want to kind of address is that whereas in Western culture, particularly in the 20th century, the apocalypse was huge. When it came to fiction and even like political discourse. And I kind of like, I just like to get your take on how its importance, whether it even is important in Chinese culture. Do Chinese readers and writers care about the apocalypse as a form of fiction?
I think it's, as a form of fiction, it's fairly new to them to have an event that the end of the world is fairly new to them. A lot of writers have been influenced by Western works. So in the new fiction that's coming out, that includes then their take on the subject. But their exploration of the apocalypse. But generally in Chinese history, there's been always a lot of disasters, natural disasters like famine, drought, pestilence. So they're quite used to having these calamities that do change the world to a certain degree. So it does happen in China, and people do care about it, but the way they deal with it is different in that the sense of renewal The disasters happen, but there's a sense of renewal, and that's reflected in the stories, in the science fiction or other stories.
I like that. That's a really good way to look at that because I think a lot of the Western apocalypse doesn't see the Western or the Western culture doesn't see apocalypse as a renewal. It sees it as only destruction leading to dystopia. So like a lot of our dystopian literature, and this doesn't have to do with religion even, but it could be climate fiction, nuclear war fiction, whatever the case is the first of all, the apocalypse does not reset. It doesn't clean. It doesn't preserve. It doesn't do anything. It just destroys. And so does climate fiction in a lot of ways. And then the dystopia is just meager survival. It's not rebirth. And so I think that there's just a different cultural context. And I do think that maybe it is because Western culture, modern Western culture, has not experienced the breadth of experience that that Chinese and other Asian cultures have. Like one of the biggest apocalypses that the Western culture has actually observed is like the Black Plague, the bubonic plague, where it wiped out somewhere around a quarter to a third of Europe's population. And Europe is still there. I mean, you know, and I know that you know, China has had its experiences with that sort of thing, and so I wonder, is it a concept that no matter what happens, China is still here, and so that's the cultural context, or is it something a little bit different?
I think they are just more used to, maybe with a longer history, like other civilizations that go back a bit further, they are more used to having disasters and resetting. It's interesting. I'm looking at a lot of mythology at the moment for my new nonfiction project, one of the nonfiction projects going on at the moment. And myths reflect a lot of civilizational psyche, something that's deep within like a nation's mindset. And certainly children read mythology when they're little. You know, we all read some, you know, picture books. And I'm looking at Chinese mythology, and that sense of, yes, the sense of renewal is there. So you have the drought and you have floods, lots of floods. Because of the geography of China, there are mountains on in the west, really big mountains in the west, and then north and a bit in the south, but there's lots of flat plains and plateaus, so it's prone to flooding and drought because of the different terrain. And so that happens, lots of people die, and you know, there's their homes are destroyed, but then they rebuild it again. So there's, yeah, I think they're just a bit more used to having apocalypse disasters. And there isn't a, and in Chinese myth, there is not like a huge, this overall, a world destroying absolute thing that happens that then destroys everything. That concept of something like Ragnarok just isn't, doesn't exist in Chinese mythology. And therefore, you know, when new generations of writers are writing contemporary fiction, you know, they deal with it differently because the myths that they read as a child, and you know, it's part of the national psyche. It's always a cycle. You know, they are informed by different worldviews. And yes, so Chinese kind of worldview views or outlooks of the world tend to be lots of cycles. There's a reincarnation, which is influenced by Buddhism, but there's also other religions in there, like Taoism and folklore. When you die, your soul travels to the underworld and gets reincarnated according to your, karma, whether into different creatures or into humans. So the soul doesn't cease to exist, it just transfers it into another life. And so with other things, with the world as well, it's very similar. So that this whole and the concept of the world being destroyed totally, it really doesn't exist in the Chinese mind frame. Even when, the concept of yin and yang, for example, it is there are two forces that exist. We're going to Taoism here. Concepts that exist, opposing forces that don't really cease to exist and don't really, that they're mutually kind of, they are overtaking one another, but never, they're always changing, but they don't cease to exist. And everything grew out of that in very early mythology. Everything grew out of that. And even when brief lives end, the Tao is still there, and something else will come out of it. It's that idea. So, I mean, I'm maybe going into too much into mythology here, but yeah, it's just a different world view, really.
Yeah, and I'm glad you did it, because I want to wrap my head around the differences, because, coming from a Judeo-Christian perspective, and I believe a little bit more than what most of my listeners believe, of course, but the cultural impact in Western culture cannot be denied, that there is the world is going to end at some point. The culture will end, the society will end at some point. And then once the human life, and even before that, outside of that, once the human life ends, the soul doesn't, but it doesn't become something else. There's no rebirth or whatever to that. And so, I think the idea of end probably has a bigger, it's like just always kind of at the back of the thought process. It's always present, is that there is an end. And then I think even for those who, reject the Judeo-Christian contextual mindset, evolution would suggest that there's still an end, like it ends, the life is over and then that's it. And so there's still an end. And then, of course, we know at some point the sun's going to, engulf the earth, that, whatever, at some point anyway, billions of years from now or whatever. So I think, the context has just always been that there's an end. It's probably going to be very disastrous. It's going to crumble things, structures, cultural contexts and societies and whatever. And so it's just interesting to understand or hear and try and understand the cultural context that the writers that you're translating and the readers that read the original stories would have thought. So I think the mythology idea is really important to understanding it. Going forward, or even looking at the near present, you are starting to see more stories pop up. Is that true? That do explore these end ideas in the Chinese cultural context?
There certainly are. There are works that explore, kind of depict a dystopian world. Perhaps not ending No, they are. Their works that depict a dystopian world, like Folding Beijing, Halting France, Folding Beijing, and like the Waste Tide, Chengdu Fan's Waste Tide. While they're not quite apocalypses, you think, oh, if the world is keeps on going this way, where is it heading? Yeah, there are works like that, but there are a lot more works that do explore a world-ending event like a virus or pollution that kill off the most of the planet's population. But then it also explores what happens after that. The examples I can give are The Path to Freedom. So these are works I've translated. The Path to Freedom by Tang Fei, and the Flower of the Other Shore. In these two stories, the apocalyptic event is a biohazard in the former and a virus in the other. Oh, both, well, biohazard really, pollution and biohazard in the former and virus in the latter. And then there are also works like Anna Wu's Mai Xie Met de Pearl. So the girl with the pearl, as in the Vermeer's painting based on a story inspired by that. That explores, that has time travel in it and explores, it talks about a future apocalypse. I'm not to give away the story too much. It does talk about an apocalypse, but what happens after that too? And then this Starship Library, which is in Synopticon, and that is, that also talks about the end of, not quite the civilized of the universe, but the end of civilization, or the complete, or as it was at the time, the end of civilization. And but also not just Earth, but several different planets. But again,
I think
something
that's a really
happens
that
after
no,
that.
that's great. Yeah, that's great. So like the one the Starship Library, I read that story in Synopticon. So
Not sure how much, what's a spoiler and what's not a
no, that's
spoiler.
okay. That's good. First of all, listener, go get Synopticon, read Starship Library. It's good story.
Long story.
Yeah, so like that society had passed away. I mean, that's part of the intro kind of to the story. There's a starship and it's basically a great library of cultures that are no longer in existence. And so, but that doesn't mean that the society in general has not continued. It just means that it's in a different form now. It looks different. It's not quite all human. But something is continuing. And so I guess that's probably just the difference in the cultural context, right?
So this one civilization that has ended, that Er Huang, on her travels, she finds out the history. She just see this, she sees this planet and it's totally like there's no life or any sign of civilization. And then there's another one, which is Earth's, which just descends into entropy. Let's not to give away too much. So it kind of explores the apocalypse in different ways, in maybe non-human perspectives or non-Earth perspectives. And in one of them, on that planet, it really has ended. It is no more. although is it? Because there is a little robot that they put everything into, the history, and that's still there, the AI. And then, so very often in, I think it is also common in Western literature, and certainly in Chinese literature, there are just a few people from a civilization or from the planet that they can see what's going to happen and they make the preparations, like the librarian, and eventually what they can see does happen and they save the situation and they bring that they're able to bring the renewal to the apocalypse. Very often in Chinese stories, humanity does mess up royally, like really badly in things like the path to freedom, where it's so polluted that the world is so polluted. Yeah, it gets so polluted that most people end up just dying. And that while a few mutants, the only people who are left on the surface are a few mutants who've somehow survived randomly the poisonous air. And they've developed like strange different features. So they've mutated and adapted. And other times, like in Starship Library, humanity really, really messes up. And in The Girl with the Pearl, Anna Wu's story, again, there's a huge battle, and in the last section, there is a huge battle, and the apocalypse happens because of the fighting. And it's very often not until humanity mess up and they clean up their mistakes that the renewal begins. Yeah. So I think the Chinese approach is quite nuanced in that and nothing is totally, and a lot of readers have said that to me. They found the stories. So not everything is awful. There might be some awful things, but there are some good things too.
I like or trying to understand that because, I grew up on because of the time frame I grew up and where I grew up, the context often became, either the religious context for me, which would have been, our concept of rapture and tribulation and things of that nature, or a nuclear war between United States and Russia that would have just obliterated most of the northern hemisphere. And so those were the contexts that I came from. And both of those are like defining moment type context. There's not a lot of nuance to, millions of kilotons of explosives dropping on all the major cities of the world. And there's not a lot of nuance to a sudden rapturous event. With a religious context. And so I think it's interesting to see. And I think maybe with climate fiction, we're starting to get some of that into the Western culture as well, where, at what level was the climate change enough to, create the dystopian environment? But I think it's interesting to see where the nuances are and how they play a role in this, in whatever given story it is. So I think that's really neat, and I'm glad you showed it to me. I appreciate that. The one I know, and this is because of Netflix, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I've basically been admitting to the listener all through this episode that I'm ignorant about this subject, which is why I've got Shui Teen on the show to help me not be ignorant about the subject anymore. But the one that I know of, and a lot of at least Americans probably know of The Wandering Earth. Which was a movie that came out in 2019 in China first, and then Netflix bought the translated version of it, the rights to it, and then made it wide. And so I watched that based on a recommendation from somebody else. It's based on a book by Luo. Did I say it right? I mean, everybody knows who he is. I'm I
The three body
cannot, I
problem
can't do it,
dying.
the three body problem. And I just know I can't do the name right. And it hurts my heart that I can't. But everybody knows this author because of the three body problem, but also wrote The Wandering Earth. And then it got turned into a movie loosely based on it. So that's my context that, the earth is going to die because of the sun if something doesn't change. And I think a lot of stories I've read or watched, I'm thinking of Stephen Baxter's The Ark, where the world is flooding. And instead of trying to figure that part out, they just send humans to a different planet. And so I think a lot of the times we talk about, transplanting humanity to somewhere else. But this story was very interesting in that they decided to move Earth into a different solar system. So I thought it was a really interesting concept and whatever I liked the movie. Probably it wasn't perfect for me, but it was a good movie. And I haven't read the stories associated with it, so I gotta still do that. But so that's where my understanding comes from. And so that's why I'm glad you're here today. Do you have commentary on that story?
So the you pointed out the crux of the difference there. The Chinese, homes are very important to them, and if it's endangered, they'd rather than fleeing from the home, they'd rather take the home with them. So yeah, this whole yeah this rather crazy idea of taking the whole Earth with them to another solar system, with powered by giant pistons, which of course it's not without its problems, because they pass the, they pass Jupiter and they get thrown off course, and they were faced with destruction if they don't steer the Earth back to the course that it's supposed to be going again. So it's hazardous. It's a hazardous kind of journey, really. Yeah. So that's a really important. Really interesting difference between how the Chinese deal with the apocalypses and what Western sci-fi do. And the story hasn't finished. There's going to be Wandering Earth 2, which comes out next year, in the Chinese New Year slot, prime time slot. And we don't where we get to find out where the how it does, the planet with all the people in it. How it's doing on its travels.
Yeah, I just recently read about that. I'm hoping that it kind of comes, works out the same way that the first movie did, where I can watch it in, dubbed English, because I'm not going to know it obviously in the Chinese. So I am looking forward to finding out how the story ends.
You should try the subtitles. You
Yeah,
get more
and is that
sense of
how
the original.
maybe that's how Netflix did it at first anyway. I don't know. I can't remember if I watched a subtitled version or dubbed because it's been a while. But yeah, I'm interested. The story, first of all, the whole Jupiter thing was fascinating in the movie. I really liked how they did it. It's amazing to find out and understand just what some of those big planets in our solar system have. I mean, they pack a punch gravity-wise. And I think that the story took advantage of that and did a lot of good work with it. So, and I do look forward to it. Speaking of what's next, Shui Teen, what's next for you? What projects are you working on right now?
So I'm working on one non-fiction project and also another one. So the one that I mentioned before on mythology, and another project to do with the history and contemporary history of Chinese literature and its contemporary development of a particular genre of fiction. Then also I have been also working on another anthology of genre fiction, and the it's not science fiction, but it is genre fiction, and I'm really excited to be sharing with you all soon the announcement.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about that at some point in the future. So keep in touch with me. Definitely. I want to know.
Yeah, will do. Yeah.
Well, Shuiting, Christine Nee, thank you for coming on the show today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And so, and again, for the listeners, the idea, the goal today, as we were sending emails back and forth from each other, is to understand the differences in the cultural expectations of apocalypse as a form of fiction, to understand what those contexts bring to fiction literature, and to kind of give some examples. And so Shuiting was able to come onto the show, talk about how it plays into Chinese myth literature, how we got to some more modern examples of that, and I will be linking to those in the show notes, and then where the cultural context is going in the future, with more and more stories coming out that do explore ideas of apocalypse, even though the cultural context is different. So I'm glad that you were here. I'm glad that you listened to this. I hope that your cultural understanding of apocalypse literature has been expanded today. If so, I would appreciate if you would share out this episode with your friends, your family members, your friends who also enjoy this sort of literature, and just help them also broaden their scope. Shuiting, thanks for joining me today. Folks, thanks for listening today. I can't wait till we meet again over a cup of coffee in space.